Good morning, and good morning to people who are listening at home as well. We are in our third week of looking at Esther. So if you've got a book, if you've got a Bible, turn to Esther chapter 2. And we're going to join the story, and I'll read it to you in Esther chapter 2 and verse 16. And this is what it says, because this part of the story is an incredible part. It all revolves around this part of the story, around character issues. Right, now I said way back in the beginning of this that very often when we turn to the book of Esther, there's only one verse that anybody ever looks at. Right, it's Esther chapter 4 and verse 14. Perhaps you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. That's all anybody ever preaches, and I have no idea why. Because the book is so rich and wonderful. And it's not about one verse. It's about what happens during the whole story. And this whole section is about character issues. And what do you do with what you know? All right, that's what happens. So let's look at verse 16, and I'll read it from there. Esther was taken to King Xerxes in the royal palace in early winter of the seventh year of his reign. Do you remember right back at the beginning what year of his reign it was when he had the feast? In the third year of his reign. We're now in the seventh year of his reign. 4 years, like that. 4 years has gone past. And you wonder, like, how quickly did the king's mind change from the other queen to finding a new queen? So we have a span of 4 years, and it's quite an amazing thing when you... When you read through the Bible, especially when you read through it quickly, you forget the time gaps, all right? So it's always, when it tells you years, look back and find the previous years, because it's quite interesting sometimes. And the king loved Esther more than any other young woman. This could be a Disney cartoon, right? Like, you've got this orphan girl who's beautiful, who the king falls in love with, and you can almost hear him singing, "Kiss the girl." You know what I mean? It's like a Disney cartoon, right? It's just wonderful. All right, and the king loved Esther more than any of the other young women. He was so delighted with her that he set the royal crown on her head and declared her the queen instead of Vashti. Why? Because she brought delight to the king. That a queen who is more worthy of the position than Vashti was. And it's an incredible thing. So just remind yourself of what we read in the earlier weeks. In verse 18, to celebrate the occasion, what does he do? He throws another banquet. All right. To celebrate the occasion, he gave a great banquet in Esther's honor for all his nobles and officials, declaring it a public holiday for the province and giving generous gifts to everyone. You see, like, you couldn't... If you were Disney, you couldn't write a better story to animate. Like, you really couldn't. It's just a great, great story. And so all this happens, and it's not just what happens to her. Listen to what this says. Even after all the young women had been transferred to the second harem, and Mordecai, depending on how you want to pronounce it, I'm always going to default to the first way I ever read it, all right? Mordecai, so I'm sorry if that offends you, Mordecai becomes a palace official. Like, it's not just her becomes queen. Mordecai, her uncle, becomes a palace official. It's an incredible story, the way that this unfolds. It's just absolutely wonderful. Now you've got to understand something as well. She gets the crown on her head. There's a feast given in her honor. She's declared the queen of the whole 127 provinces, stretching from India to Ethiopia, but she's still not a diva. And I love that. Do you remember? She's still not a diva. She's in this incredible position. But it says this in verse 20, and we can read it. It says this, that she still, right? Esther continued to keep her family background and nationality secret. She was still following Mordecai's direction, just as she had when she lived at home. She's this incredible position of power, but she's still following direction. How many of us who have kids hope that when our kids leave home, they do what we taught them? Right? And there's a humility in that. There's a humility that we spend our time trying to train our kids in the way they should act. And it's always good when you get a report from somewhere that says, I just want to let you know, I was with your kid and I saw this. And you think, awesome. And that's what's happening with Esther. Even though she's in the palace, she's in this incredible position, she's still taking advice from her uncle. That's humility, right? In an incredible position. There's a one, I don't, forgive me, I like country radio, right? It's in my Jeep. And I like to sing it. And there's a wonderful song. It was sung at a funeral in a small town on the prairies. Always be humble and kind. And it personified the young man that had died. And he was a young guy, and he died. And so they played it at his funeral. Always be humble and kind. Remember the kindness of Esther. This loveliness, this quality that she has, and it's linked together with this humility. It's a character issue, right? You can give talent and gifts in an instant, but it takes a lifetime to develop the character that it needs to be able to carry those gifts. Like, we can give a gift in an instant, but yeah, as we heard the other week from Mike, when he was here, and he talked about the gift of the multicolored coat that was given to Joseph, and the gift of the dreams that he had, but he didn't have the character at that time to wear the coat with humility, and he didn't have the character at that time to receive the dreams with humility. And that's what caused part of his demise, is why his brothers hated him, because the character wasn't in place to carry the gift. And God works on us to make sure that we have the character that can carry this gift. And this girl, this Esther, she ends up in this wonderful place, but she's still following the direction of her uncle. Now then, this is what it happens. Let's get down to some, where the dum dum dum, the plot thickens. This is where we are in verse 21. One day, as Mordecai, as a king's official, was on duty at king's gate, two of the eunuchs, please, if you have kids, ignore these names, Bigthana and Teresh, right? Bigthana and Teresh, who were guards at the door of the king's private quarters, became angry at King Xerxes and plotted to assassinate him. Now listen to this. He's sitting at the king's gate and he starts to hear court gossip. Starts to hear court gossip about trying to assassinate the king. Just kill him, you know. And if somebody just said it as a flippant remark, it's different. But these two guys are the private guards of the king's chamber. They're in the perfect position to do it. The private guards of the king's chamber. It gives you these details for a reason, all right? So the private guards of the king's chamber, they're talking to each other, and they became angry with the king, and we're going to kill him. Now, just put yourself in Mordecai's position. Who is King Xerxes to him? In the historical context of this story, who is King Xerxes to him? Is King Xerxes a Jew? Where are they? Begins with B, ends with Babylon. So where are they? Babylon. The Babylonian Empire. He's the king that carried him off into exile, and somebody's going to plot to kill him. What do you do? What do you do with what you know? Now you know, it's that incredible question. Now you know what you know, how do you live? Now we know what we know, how do we live? And this is a character issue for Mordecai. Mordecai, he's sitting there and he's listening to all this stuff going on and he has a choice to make. I'm not involved in the plot. I just heard about it. I'm not involved in it. Hey, I'm a Jew. I'm not even a Babylonian. He's not my king. Why? Who knows? If I keep quiet and they kill him, that could be part of God's plan. You see all the different decisions that are running through this. This guy has a decision to make. He has a choice to make, and his choice reveals his character. Do I let murder happen? Do I allow this to happen even though it's to my enemy? What was that command? Love your enemy. Or do I let him get murdered? And he's got this. I can't imagine being in the place that he's in, just the turmoil. Like, because if he says something to the king, all the Jewish people are going to hate him for saving his life. And if he doesn't say anything, and somebody finds out, and the king survives, then he's going to get killed. And if they succeed, and they know that, then he's going to be in part of this whole coup and this revolution to overthrow the. So like the guy has a decision to make. And the wonderful thing is. Especially if you ever get asked to go to court to testify for anything, you just tell the truth. You just tell the truth. You don't have to have a good memory to tell the truth, you just tell the truth. You've only got to have a really, really, really good memory to remember which lies you told. And most people don't have a good enough memory to be good liars, because they forget what they said in the original story. But if you tell the truth, it never changes. It's always the same. So you just tell the truth, you tell the truth, you just tell the truth. And so this guy sits there and he listens and he makes a decision. What does he do? He tells Esther. He tells Esther. Esther, listen. Yeah, I don't want to spread rumors, don't want to gossip. I just heard these guys talking. And so what does Esther do? She has the same decision now that Mordecai had. And what does she do? She goes and tells the king. Now, if you're the king and you're in the position of authority that he's in ultimate power, ultimate authority over anybody and thing, what do? You just go out, just grab the guys and you chop their heads off and it's over. Well, no, he doesn't. And this is a great warning for all of us, because that's not what he does. It says after he makes a full investigation. Always remember that. Like, you can read all sorts of stuff about this COVID thing on the web. Like, you can go on there, you can pull up all these pictures and all these different plots and all these skits, and everybody go, oh, yeah, it's a plot, yeah, yeah. It's a plot, it's a scheme, it's a conspiracy theory. Like, look, please, Google is not research. It's Google. All right? It's Google. Whatever theory you have on the earth, you can find some trying to find a politically correct word. Some nutter out there who's I'm not going to be political. So you're going to find some weirdo somewhere who's going to agree with you. No matter what theory you put on the internet, you'll find people to source that will agree with you. So please don't, like, research. And so they did their research and they found out that the story was actually true after a full investigation. And when that happened, in verse 23, it was a bad day for two guys. It says they impaled them on a pole. Now, the Old Testament is quite a bloody book. It's like of ways to die, not a good way to go. Like, of ways to go to meet the King of Kings, not a good way to get there. Like, there was different ways of doing it. They either did it through the back like that, or they did it through the front, so they hung you over the pole. They like to do it over the back so that you're exposed to the elements and it took you a while to die. Or they just got the pole and they just sat you on it long ways, all the way through, and you're thinking, that is not good. That is a bad day for anybody, right? But after they made the full investigation, the king killed these two guys. And then it says this. These are the incredible words that it says. And all these things, check to make sure it's in your Bible. Because it's important that it is. And I check most of the things, the interpretations and the translations of the Bible, and it was in most of them. This was all recorded in the book of the history of the kings of Xerxes' reign. This was all written down and recorded in the record of Xerxes' reign. Why does that matter? Well, because later on in the story, it's going to matter a lot. When the king finally opens the record of the book and reads through the book, whose name is he going to find there? Begins with M, ends with Mordecai. He's going to find Uncle Morty. He's going to find Uncle Morty's name in the book. Now, I don't know about you, but if you flip forward to a story, you don't have to do it now and check it later, in Matthew 10 and verse 20, and read the story there. In Luke, sorry, not Matthew, you won't find it there. In Luke chapter 10, verse 20, you'll find that Jesus sends out 72 of his disciples. More than 12, right? 72 in his ministry team. He sends them out in pairs. And when they return to Jesus after their missions trip, they say this. They say, even the demons had to obey us. When we prayed for the sick, people were healed, and even the demons. And Jesus says these incredible words to them. Well, that's nice, boys. Great. In my translation. It's nice, boys. Great. But don't be glad about that. Rather be glad that your names are written in heaven. Right? Rather be glad that your names are written in heaven. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 5. Revelation chapter... I've written it down. I can't pull it out. 13 and verse 8. It talks about the Lamb's Book of Life. Having your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And what happens if your name isn't written in the Lamb's Book of Life? Now, Mordecai's name gets written in Xerxes' book, and it will matter when the book is opened. Having my name written in the Lamb's Book of Life is the most important place that I can have my name recorded. I have a birth certificate. I've got it, and it's recorded. I have a marriage certificate, and my name is recorded on it. I have documents with my passport, and I have a Nexus pass to get backwards and forwards across the border quickly when it's open. And that's an important document to have. But the most important place for my name to be written is the Lamb's Book of Life. Mordecai's name was written in the King's Book. But I want my name written in the King's book. That's where I want it. You see, it can be attached. I don't know where your name is written. I mean, maybe your name's attached to RRSPs, right? Maybe it's a tax-free saving account. I don't know. Maybe it's a trust fund. If it is, I'd like to take you to dinner. I don't know what your name's attached to. Maybe your name's attached to property deeds. But ultimately, none of that really matters. The only place where my name needs to be recorded, where it ultimately matters, is the Lamb's Book of Life. My name has to be in the King's book. It's got to be in his book. And I want to live a life that puts my name in the King's book. Now, on that great and dreadful day... me and John were having a conversation about this during the week. When Jesus comes back, it's going to be a terrifying thing. And when we stand in front of him, it will be a terrifying thing. He comes back as judge. The last time he left the earth in a state of grace. When he comes back to judge. Even in Islam, Jesus is the returning judge. That's a poo your pants thought. Like truly, like it's just a stink. Like really. He's coming back as judge. And when he opens the book, he's gonna find out whose name is in there. And I want my name there. It's a good day to have your name in somebody's book. My name has been in a few policemen's books over the years, and on their daily notes, and I have to turn their notes in, they record it, and think, oh, stink, it's there again. And that's not a good book to be in, right? But it is good when your name is in the King's book. And I want to ask you this morning, where's your name written? Is your name in the King's book? Because there's going to be this day when the Lamb steps forward, the Lamb, one who steps forward as like a lamb who has been slain in John's revelation. And you've got to remember that John is the closest friend that Jesus had physically on the earth. And yet in his vision of Jesus appearing in Revelation, he doesn't run up to him and hug him. He hits the floor, trembling in fear. And as the lamb steps forward and opens the book, it's going to be big. It's going to be a big book. It's not going to be digital. I was going to lick my tongue then. I shouldn't. He's not going to pull out his iPad. Scroll through. It's going to be a book. The universe is going to shake as the pages turn. And he's going to go down and say, Phil, Philip, Can, 1L, right? Yeah, 1L. That's me. That's my name. It's in his book. Where is your name written? Where's your name written? How do I get my name written in his book? I start by saying sorry for all the times in my character when I haven't acted with the humility that this young girl acts with. That I haven't acted with the grace to follow the directions that I've been given by the King of Kings. I start by saying, and I start there, and as I start by saying those words, you can almost hear the quill being dipped in the ink pot in heaven. And he's scratching out the name. Phil. And then it's just sealed, and it's there forever. Where is your name written? Stand with me, if you will, please.